welcome to Chats, a television podcast, Season 12, Peaks Chats, The Return. My name is Magellan, and fuck you, Alan. It's Alan.
Yes! Oh, God, Magellan, thank you. All I wanted after watching this episode was for someone to tell me to fuck you. All I wanted.
Do you want to do one?
Fuck you, Ryan.
Ryan's good. Here too, joining us for this episode and our entire coverage of The Return. Fuck you, Ryan. It's Ryan. Everybody should do one to everybody, I think.
No, this is what I'm going to do.
Uh-oh.
What are you going to do?
You're going to go high because we went low?
Yeah.
No, Alan, I want to be on Twin Peaks, but Alan said, fuck you. Can you, we can go together. Do you want to, can you come with me?
Wait, I'm confused.
Wait, what is this? I'm scared.
Okay, no. I can't. If none of you get the bit, then we can't do this. Okay. Remember when Albert comes back to Gordon?
I can roll with you. Say please.
What?
You heard me.
Ew.
You swear to me.
It's Batman voice. Well, hey, welcome. We're talking about Twin Peaks The Return once again. This time around on Peaks Chats, we watched part 7 of Twin Peaks The Return, which has the tagline, there's a body, all right. It was directed by David Lynch, written by Mark Frost and David Lynch, and it aired on June 18th, 2017. What do we think of this? Kind of a slow episode, kind of not pretty straightforward, not a lot going on.
I want to die.
Yeah, it turns out I remember this being a high-action episode. Completely wrong.
Super
know?
Boring. Dull.
Yeah.
Show's canceled, basically. Dead show.
Yeah. What do we think? Do we like it?
Ryan, you have strong thoughts. Go first, please.
That's fucking great. This is a great episode. Mm. It's great. The show is moving. It's great.
Yeah.
This will be the continued pattern in the second half of the season. Is that the show just becomes a show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's finally resembling the full picture of Twin Peaks The Return that I remember. Now that we have, like, Diane is fully here and the FBI investigation is accelerating, this definitely felt like a big push forward for a lot of the major plots in a meaningful way. And I liked pretty much all of it. I think there are some absurd scenes that could be very off-putting to some people. But at this point, 100%, if you're not bought in, you're not bought in. This is like a gateway episode.
Yeah, if you're not bought in by this point, then let's like, this is what the show's going to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Meg, did you enjoy this this wacky ride?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of goofy stuff and like kind of clunky expositional stuff along with the cool stuff. So it wasn't my favorite episode so far, but I liked it. And if this is what the rest of the show is like, great. I'm glad.
I just mean with the more pace.
Yeah,
pace-wise. Yeah. Like, right. It is very intentionally,
it stays this
like,
fast. Yeah.
Settles you in and then hits you with the good stuff.
A lot of great surrealism in this one, which is always one of my favorite things that Lynch does, is he directs surrealism so well. I actually was just watching a clip while I was waiting for y'all to get on of him directing a scene from episode 8 that we'll talk about next week. But he's having fun with it. Everyone's having fun. They're doing their characters. And people are moving plots forward, like I said. So let's get into it. Jerry Horn wakes up in the woods, high out of his mind. He's leftover stoned. And
I think I'm high.
He does think he's high.
Oh, good Lord, Jerry.
I don't know where I am!
Me to Magellan whenever I have one beer.
My favorite part of this scene is whenever Jerry says something, Ben Horn just goes, what? It's super funny.
Oh, I love the sibling energy here. I'm so glad you clipped that, because Jerry Horn sounds like someone doing an old man impression.
I think I'm high! My hip!
He thinks someone stole his car, just like, didn't someone think that Margaret stole their car in season 2?
Yeah.
No, that was,
Who was that?
Pete.
That wasn't this season. Oh, no, yeah, Pete. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pete said Grand Theft Auto.
Classic scene. Hawk shows Frank the pages that he found in that bathroom door. We thought that they were pages from Laura's diary, and boom, we were right.
We're annoyed because it's stuff that we already knew. Come on.
Yeah. I'm not annoyed. I've been waiting 4 years because I watched this show in like 2014. Yep. For someone to say the good Cooper is in the lodge and he can't leave. Write it in your diary.
Right.
Come on. Big pop.
Was that line from The Missing Pieces or from Firewalk With
it's
Me?
From Firewalk it's with from me. Firewalk With Me.
It's from the original film? Okay.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, that is a long wait to be like, how surreal must that be? Speaking of surrealism.
It fucking happened. I forgot that it happened and that it was a plot point that was meant to be picked up later. And here it fucking is. It's great.
And it's Annie's words spoken through Laura writing them in her diary.
Which we get mention of Annie.
Amazing. Annie Blackburn. What? Literally Annie
exists.
Blackburn.
Pretty cool.
Annie's for Annie canon. Cool.
Annie, and then that's
Annie's now officially more canon than Wyndham Earl, so nicely done.
Yeah, aww, that's true.
That's really true. Somebody says, now
are
I know
you bummed out by that, Alan? Are you sad about that?
Who did I my friends and I on Discord a while ago watched Mobile Suit Gundam G Savior, which is the live-action Gundam movie from the 90s. It's really, really bad. And
wait, when did you guys watch this?
Like 2 months ago. One of the main villains of that movie is the guy who plays Wyndham Earl. It's the only other thing I've ever seen him in.
What?
Yeah, it's fucking cool.
I have to watch this now.
Yeah, it's really bad, Ryan. Just a heads up. But anyways,
what the fuck? I don't know. GGP loves it.
It's good bad, but it's bad. So in this, to come pivot back to Twin Peaks, they know it isn't Bob, and someone says, I know who it is.
Then that line seems to be referring to Laura's realization in Firewalk With Me that it's her father.
That's Leland, yeah. Right.
And that's why these pages were torn out and are missing, theoretically, is because Leland is trying to cover his tracks, which makes sense.
Yeah.
How fascinating is it? Sorry to interrupt you, but how fascinating is it just that we are really getting the like show acknowledging the Laura Leland stuff in a way that we never really got during the main show until the very, very tail end. Now they're just like, yeah, we realized this. It was Leland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like how much discourse there was, but sorry, you were saying?
Yeah. Well, and the other detail from this scene is that there's still one page missing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of characters who I found it weird to hear mentioned, Hawk references Jacques Renault, and to hear Jacques Renault's name in 2017, or in this case in 2021, I was like, wait, no, that's another plot that's not supposed to exist.
Right. And then you watch the rest of the episode.
Do you think Lynch put that scene here to set up the sweeping scene?
Yes.
Oh, I bet.
I definitely do. Or like his editor did. Let's be real, right? Because it's like, that scene could have fit in a lot of spaces, but they're like, we'll put the sweeping at the end. And we'll put this in the beginning so that it's in your head.
Right.
And the last line, big line here, the one who came out of the lodge with Annie that night was not the good Cooper, which we already knew.
Yeah. So Hawk basically solves like, okay, there's a doppelganger based on this thing from Laura.
And then Frank goes, let me ask my brother Harry what he thinks of this.
And then we get another scene where he calls Harry and says stuff like,
Harry, do me a favor. Beat this thing.
Like, cool. Okay, great.
So
what is this?
This scene at least works more to me than when they did this before.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because Frank would call Harry and be like, what's up?
Yeah.
And then like not do it when Harry just talks about being sick.
Right.
Also, this scene wasn't scripted. That's why the lighting is different. Lynch wrote this on set because he thought the scene should exist.
Oh, weird. That's interesting. He does a good job of playing that one side of the phone call. People aren't always that good at that.
But, yeah, I don't know. It's another one of these scenes.
Yeah.
It seems basically assumed at this point that we're to understand Harry has cancer or some sort of terminal illness.
Something, yeah.
But that's what we get for Truman updates this week. We get a brief scene of Andy attempting to interrogate a truck driver, which I mostly want to mention because it's very well shot. The camera
the stuff looks great, yeah.
It's wonderful. It's like the camera spins around them as he's just, it's just a very boring conversation, right? It's like, did you see this? And the guy's like, you gotta go, I need you to leave. But it's just filmed in a way that's like, this has intensity and weight to it.
Yeah. And it's the same truck that Richard Horn was driving when he killed the kid.
Right, right. This is that plot line coming back again.
And the dude is scared. He's like, leave. And
get the
then
fuck out.
And then Andy, number one cop in the world, goes,
okay,
meet me at this place at this time, 430. And then the dude is like, all right, and then goes into his house.
Wait, he said 430? God damn.
He said 430.
Yeah, literally 430. Yeah.
God damn it.
Okay, well, we solved it, right? 430.
And we have, yeah.
We solved the season.
I love those little stuff like that, because all of it, it's meant to have multiple interpretations, but we've got our first, it's just like the lost numbers.
It fucking means nothing. This means nothing.
It doesn't come back. No.
What? 430 means like, nothing?
They're just like, here, fuck you. Here's another thing.
It's just a thing to think about. Like, it's thinking about how, like, patterns repeat themselves.
Yeah.
Is more what it's getting at. Like, hey, stuff repeats itself a lot in this world for some weird reason.
Wait, so are we going to hear 430 other times?
You will hear it, yes.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying this specific instance where the time is randomly 4-3. That's not, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. It's just that you're supposed to go.
I think it's the key to everything.
Well,
personally, right. That's my interpretation.
I think you're basically right. I think the key.
You see the alien inside of the owl is what you're saying.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
I think the key to everything is my Skype login, because
this fucking freaking rules.
This is incredible.
This exchange.
Do you know what Skype is, Doc?
I use it all the time. Just the other day, I diagnosed Mrs. Bueller's eczema. Never had to get out of my chair.
What's your Skype handle, Doc? I'll saddle up.
Hiddleberry Doc.
I love it. I love it.
Knowing the background that Mark Frost and David Lynch wrote so much of this on Skype together makes that way funnier.
Way funnier. And that's Warren Frost again. Like,
yeah. It's Warren Frost. So, and also some background that also makes this very sweet. Like, they shot this before principal photography even started on the show. So, like, I was like, the holiday season and the Frosts were like at home, and they, you know, they knew they were going to do Twin Peaks, so they had this scene, and Lynch directed Doc Hayward over Skype while the other Frost brothers were helping with like the lighting and the setting and stuff.
That's really cute,
because I mean, he is like 90-91 at this point, right. So they knew he was pretty close to passing away, so they wanted to get this in over Skype.
He's 92. Which is like, wow,
which is like really sweet. So
yeah,
it's a really nice scene.
It's I don't like to say wholesome that often, but I would consider this wholesome. There's something nice about, like, all right, well, instead of all the various calls on the radios and whatnot that we got in the original series, now, like, yeah, modern police and like asking people in the town questions would be done over Skype sometimes. It's just that.
Also, we're bearing the lead because David Lynch built a desk where you pull the lever and the monitor comes up.
I kind of want this.
Just for the sheriff to Skype people. Like, yes. What's going on here?
Don't think too hard about the logistics of, like, does he turn that computer off? Where does he put the mouse and keyboard when he's not using them? Like,
it's fun to me that new Sheriff Truman guy, what's his first name? I forget.
Frank.
That Frank is even more of like a classic cowboy seaman guy than Harry Truman. And he seems to be the main driver behind like the modernization of the sheriff's department. He's just like, yeah, beat this thing, brother. Anyway, you know what I mean?
Scap your doc. And then I love that he pecks at the keyboard like a really, like an old person. That's perfect.
Yes.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Type with my index.
He can
fingers.
Hit that lever real fast, but he hasn't quite got his typing speed up.
No, he has to do.
So we want to talk about the lore. That's actually
sure.
What the scene is for.
Yeah, why not?
He recaps again. It's a lot of stuff we already, like, we the viewer.
No, this isn't stuff we know.
Ryan,
this is
so
Wyatt,
take the reins. Tell me what they say in the scene.
Okay, I thought you were going to yell at me for correcting you again.
That's my I'm passive aggressive. My way of getting mad at you is telling you to do it.
Okay, so Frank Truman asks Doc Hayward what he remembers about Dale Cooper, because he tells him he's working on like some case that came up. And Doc Hayward says, I don't remember what I ate this morning, but I remember that day.
By the way, he perfectly remembers what he ate this morning. In exact detail. That was really funny to me.
Yeah, good catch, by the way.
Yes, totally. But yeah, Doc Hayward talks about Cooper being at the hospital because he was acting weird after he got out of the lodge. And then afterwards, he saw Cooper. He left and went to intensive care where
Audrey Horne was.
Audrey Horne, who was in a coma after the bank explosion.
So the bank explosion's canon too.
Rest in peace,
Miller. Because Pete's dead.
Right. I'm just saying all that stupid stuff from season two. I'm glad they are acknowledging some of it.
You need to have an excuse to not have Pete in the show.
Yeah, right. Otherwise, I would have been very mad.
And then Doc Hayward said that he saw Cooper's face, and he saw that strange face again. Mm-hmm. And he tried to call out to him, but he walked away.
So.
And then they talk about breakfast.
Yeah, for like a while.
I saw Doppel Cooper, and he walked up to Audrey, and she was comatose, so they ran it. They were in the same space. Anyways, so eggs. Yeah.
Yeah, so something's up with that. We haven't seen Audrey yet, so we don't know.
It's the same.
What's up with Audrey?
I'm sitting on my hands.
But, yeah, a lot of lore in this otherwise, like, sweet scene. It's like a blink and you miss it sort of thing.
Yeah. But it confirms a lot of things that we wanted to know, which is useful. And then speaking of lore, we get even more at more lore, if you will. As Lieutenant Knox arrives in Buckhorn, South Dakota, she meets Detective McClay, who says the line of the episode. She says, you know, where are the fingerprints? How'd you guys get the fingerprints? And they're like, well, we actually have the body. She's like, excuse me, you guys have the body? And he's like, "That there's a body, all right. He said the episode title.
Yay.
So I guessed it correctly last week.
Nice. Good job.
So she sees the body and she confirms with her supervisor, Davis, who I'm now realizing, by the way, is Ghostbuster Ernie Hudson. What a weird celebrity pull.
Yeah.
Super weird,
right? Yeah.
I was like, why do I recognize him? And then I Googled it and I was like, yeah, that's just Ernie Hudson. Great. Love the guy.
I like that.
And they find some discrepancies with Major Briggs' body, because he would have been in his 70s if he died recently, but the body that they found appears to be in its 40s, which is approximately where Briggs would have been.
The correct age when he disappeared, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is basically like the body as it was like in the original series, basically.
Super surreal, right.
So and his head is missing, and we know his head's in space. So that we know.
It fell. That's just super logical and makes sense. Yeah. Again, we're burying the lead, though. This is something I love about this episode. Is like normal things happen, and then right underneath the surface, not normal things keep happening.
Yeah, another instance of Lynch, like, you know, putting something really creepy under some exposition.
Yes. Yeah. There's a dull humming sound that turns into a light scratching, and a mysterious, bedraggled man walks by in the background and kind of stops towards the door. And then
seems like maybe a similar looking guy to the guy who's in the jail cell. Yeah.
Yes.
When we were just hanging out with Shaggy in jail.
Remember, we're doing Goofy impressions and we're talking about Shaggy. This is a cartoon podcast now.
The way the scene is shot, it's very creepy.
It's so creepy. Well, because the camera like does not focus on that guy. You're like looking in the corner of your eye, like, what is that? Why is that there? What's this man doing?
And then she turns to look at him, and it's like, did you not see that guy?
Right. You didn't see like a dude there. You didn't want to like turn and ask him, like, hey, what's up? How are you? Do you need anything? No. It's just a guy there who's walking around living his life. They mentioned that they don't want to lose the body. So the sort of like writing and directing implies that maybe somebody's going to try to take the body or something. We don't know yet. But that's what I got from the sort of pacing of this scene.
Well, they have to call the FBI.
Also, yes, they have to call. They say, like, this isn't going to be your case for much longer, Detective McClay, which is going to become an FBI thing very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get into a lighter, sort of a lighter scene. Gordon is sitting in his office in front of a painting of corn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. No, it's that's the atom bomb.
He's in front of the atom bomb, but the corn is on the other wall.
Right. There is another
and the camera, really fixates on the corn for a bit there.
Garmon Boz, yeah. And then he's whistling something. Is he whistling something in particular?
Oh, corn.
I love you, John. God.
This is the good corn before it's been creamed.
Oh, God. Don't let it get creamed. How'd it get creamed? Is this song something?
Or is Gordon, yes.
Yeah, he's just whistling the X-Files theme song, I think.
No, he's not.
He loves X-Files. What song is it, Ryan?
He is Angel. He is whispering. He is whistling. Okay, I can't speak English today. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Okay. You need a minute?
The video title I am looking at says Twin Peaks, Gordon Cole Whistling Angle by Rammstein.
What? He's singing, he's whistling Rammstein?
I mean, I can send you this video.
What? No, I believe you. Oh, Angle, E-N-G-E-L. Wait, even weirder, what? Okay, so confirmed, Gordon Cole's a fan of Rammstein. That's really fantastic.
Rammstein was in Lost Highway.
Oh, they were.
Yeah.
Oh, good catch. So many weird fucking pop culture references.
As a Rammstein fan, this scene made me so happy.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So yes, I guess it's intentional.
German rock metal band, if people aren't familiar with Rammstein, just FYI. Really well known.
There's a scene in Lost Highway where some David Lynch shit happens.
Yeah.
And in the background, Rammstein goes, Rammstein.
Are they? They're physically in it, right? That's like my favorite scene in that movie, I think. It's one of my
I don't remember if they're actually in it, but the music is in
yes.
a lot.
Yeah. God, Lost Highway is a good movie. God damn it. So Gordon's just whistling, having a great time. And then we finally, hold on. Alba reports to him that he couldn't get a word in with Diane about Cooper. And then here we go. It's time for the introduction of everybody's favorite character, the
Hold
number
up.
One.
There, wait, a couple of lines I just want to play before we get there. Yes. It's what Ryan referenced at the beginning, where Gordon's like, hey, so Albert, you're going to come with me, right?
Say please.
What?
You heard me.
Please.
Whoa.
Pretty good.
I love my voice so much.
Huge McGovern power.
Is like really sexy. Can I say that?
Yes. I agree.
Sorry. Anyway.
It's a lot of it is the voice. Like, that's an incredible voice he's doing there.
You heard me. Say please.
Yeah. Oh. Sheesh.
Sheesh. And then the other line I really liked is, so yeah, they're going to Diane's apartment, and when some guy answers the door, Gordon Cole goes,
FBI champ, friends of Diane.
Just him calling dudes champ is pretty funny.
That feels like David Lynch just talking to young people.
Yeah.
Also, Diane clearly just slept with somebody from the bar.
Yep.
The night before.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she is an angry, angry person.
Yeah, very not happy to see him.
Not happy to see anybody. Doesn't seem to particularly care about the person she just slept with. One of my favorite character archetypes in media is mean women. So Diane immediately ingratiated herself to me. I love everything about her in these scenes. She says the line, "My attitude is none of your fucking business." Which, yeah.
No, go ahead.
She brings the fuck counter in this episode like times 10. She, you know, like multiplies it.
Right. Like half the fucks in the whole show are Diane's, if not more.
Easily.
And then I really like the exchange where Gordon sort of invites himself to sit down and they say this.
You got any coffee?
No. I don't have any cigarettes either.
And she's drinking coffee.
The memory of tobacco. But I gave it up.
Fuck you, Gordon.
So mean.
I put that one under my like random thing Gordon Cole says.
The
memory of tobacco.
Pretty good. I love the pure confidence of I don't have any cigarettes either. Takes a drag from the cigarette. Mm-hmm.
And of course, David Lynch on his own show, you know, gets to yell damn good coffee.
I know.
Damn good coffee.
Like, you're not allowed to do that, Gordon.
You broke some sort of rule. It's like when how Evil Cooper has a tape recorder. You're like, this is weird. No, not allowed. Not allowed. But they are telling her that they need her to identify what's going up with Mr. C in person, so she has to come to South Dakota. And she reluctantly agrees. They have a private plane, which is awesome. I guess the FBI just has money, right? They can just do that. Mm-hmm. And then Gordon does some weird stuff here. So he touches Tammy's hands, which he mentions that there is a spiritual finger. And he taps out all of the words that Mr. C said to him. It's very good to see you again. Magellan, I'm going to test you right now. We're going to see if you can catch why this is weird. Because I noticed in your notes you were like, what's going on here? Gordon is telling Tammy that he learned something when he spoke to Doppel Cooper in the prison.
Yep, and there was something about the words. He was associating the words with the fingers and the reversed fingerprints, and he said something about the word very being reversed, and that's the word that he stops on. So I don't know what that means.
I just put a clip in Discord. Can you go ahead and hit like 3, 2, 1 play on that?
Yeah.
Okay. Do we all have this?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
3, 2, 1 play.
You're very good to see you again, old friend.
Okay. I didn't notice that the first time.
Yeah, me neither. 100%. I had to Google that.
This is one of those fun things where, like, it is something I noticed because I was on Twitter and message boards, and everybody was like, he said very backwards here. And to have it being brought up in another episode when this show was, like, shot all at once was, like, cool.
Which is very
and backwards. So that's an indication that he's like a lodge associated entity because he spoke backwards. Interesting. I did not catch that.
Yeah.
When he first spoke to Gordon.
Also, the finger that is considered the spiritual finger is the finger that people wear the ring on. It is also the finger that Bob puts nails letters under. It all ties together. This is just cool. Hey, are you paying attention? He's basically confirming to Tammy right now and to us who are like looking for details that they realized in that conversation that he's from the lodge. This is not the Cooper that they were looking for. And
That's some fun Mark Frost.
It's like putting on the 3D glasses, basically. It's like, oh, you're paying attention. You really don't notice it the first time, and then you hear a clip of it and you're like, oh, Yerev. Yeah. Yerev is very backwards. I got it.
We also learned that Diane is like seems hip to some of the stuff that Gordon and Albert are hip to, because Gordon says like it has to do with something that you know about, and that's all I'm going to say about it. So Diane must sort of know what's going on too, which is interesting.
Yeah, she has a interview or an interrogation of sorts with Doppel Cooper next, which is very intense. I wouldn't say as actively scary as the first one, but unsettling for it's unsettling for different reasons. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
It's it's scary for different reasons. It's not like what is he going to say? It's like there's something really dark that's not being said right now, and there's like a fear under this.
I don't want to make light of this too much because like they're talking about very serious stuff. And also I couldn't help but be detached and laugh from it when I was pulling clips because it kind of and like a, if there was a laugh track, it could have read like,
I think you're upset with me,
but I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
Where was the last place you saw me? Your house.
Yep.
Anyway.
It's the classic, like, however you read this, you can read it as very, like, weird.
David Lynch has done that, by the way. He has put laugh tracks under things that are meant to be existential.
Really?
In the Rabbits short film.
Oh, I keep meaning to watch that.
He has done that. He did that.
That's interesting.
He seems intimately familiar with the way that comedy and drama are like very similar.
Also, when he says at your house, there's like extra distortion on his voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very creepy.
Yeah,
like the giant creepy. Said, it's in our house.
There you go.
You need to stop. Oh my
God. I know. I refuse to, though. So
we basically learn in this conversation, Diane is like really nervous to talk to Bad Cooper.
Laura Dern upset. Fucking kills it.
So here, good. By the way. So good. Laura Dern is incredible. And like the whole
The way the shot is composed, like it is offset, so you see Diane's reflection and Cooper in the same frame.
Yeah.
And you see like Diane shriveling up as she's talking to Cooper. It's just top tier stuff.
Yeah. And what we get from this is all we really know is at some point this Cooper went to Diane's house and there was an evening where something happened that she's really upset about. And she tells Gordon later, like, we'll have a talk about this. But obviously something bad happened there.
This is not the Dale Cooper that I knew. It isn't time passing or the way he looks, but there's something different about him. We also have been getting seeds that she is coping with that, whatever that trauma is, by drinking heavily between the bar and the fact that she keeps little shooters with her all the time. She throws back a shooter and says, do you have this line clipped by the way, Magellan?
Fuck you, Albert.
That one?
There's that, and then she also says cheers to the FBI, and she throws back another one.
Oh, no, I didn't clip that one. No. I did also clip this, though.
What'd you say your name was again? Tammy. Fuck you, Tammy.
So good.
Tammy wants to be liked. now it's not the time.
Yeah.
So we have Diane now, and we have a layer of darkness and seriousness to the investigation plot that was not there before, or that was like implied, but it's now becoming clearer. And the doppelganger Cooper is still in jail and wants to meet with the warden. And he mentions some interesting details about the things that he brought, how he brought, there was a dog leg in his trunk and that the three other legs of that dog were sent out to people who could pose a threat to the warden if something bad were to happen to Doppel Cooper.
Yeah. It seems like the warden has like had somebody killed or he's involved in some sort of untoward dealings and Cooper knows about them, which does like Bob Cooper just have dirt on like every warden in the country or something? Like how did he have this sort of perfect knowledge for the exact, cause I thought that like Ray, he seemed like unconvinced that Ray was in prison for a reasonable reason. Like, oh, he just suddenly got locked up or whatever. So I thought this was some kind of like a setup or a trap. And then he knows how to hack the prison or whatever. He knows the dirt on the warden. He gets him and Ray out. And it's like, well, why is he here? Is it just luck that he got locked up and we found him? I don't know. I'm a little confused by like how convenient some of this stuff is.
Yeah, like what was the purpose of him going to prison then if he knew he could just get out that easily also?
Well, remember when he got on his laptop and he brain blasted the information into his head?
Oh, sure. That's when he was learning about the warden's dealings, you're saying?
I don't know. That's my justification.
That makes sense. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I know he gets like the map of the prison there and he probably like also downloaded. Yeah, Joe McCluskey is the person he names here.
Yeah, this is what I like is that he's like, tell him I need to talk about a strawberry. Mm-hmm. And then he goes in and then he's like, how do I know you know about the strawberry? And he's like, Joe McCluskey. And he's like,
oh, fuck.
And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. I love it.
There's nothing here.
Doesn't matter the context. Like, they are having a separate show within this show where these words mean the world. And it's meaningless to me. And I'm just enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when Doppel Cooper and Ray eventually leave the prison, and you get to see that it's like 3 a.m. or something, and the warden like watches them leave. He looks so downtrodden. He like looks like he has fundamentally failed, and it's, I mean, he just let 2 criminals go on nothing.
Right.
2 horrible people.
And how is he supposed to explain this to the FBI? Like, what is he going to say?
Also, yeah, exactly. When they come back, he's going to be like, he left. He got out.
Yeah, right.
The cameras don't show anything, I guess. It's weird. Yeah, the prison stuff I always found super weird. Yeah, I don't think it, like Ryan's saying, I don't think it really needs to be fixated on in regards to the main plot, but it's more like...
Yeah, I think I think Ryan's explanation makes enough sense to me that I'm like, okay, sure.
Doppel Cooper that knows works. Things. Exactly.
Yeah.
Really brief scene of Andy continuing to investigate, which I only bring up because I always like take note of notable cuts in the show. And while he's investigating in the rain or whatever, we pan over to a house, like some random like shack or house or something. And then there's more humming. And it's like,
well, it's the guy he talked to.
Yeah. So something's in there, too. It's so weird. I don't know what's going on. I forget. There's so many things in this episode where I was like, wait, what is this? This, too?
Well, the door is open. And so I guess something happened with the guy.
Yes. Yes.
Basically, we were supposed to take
maybe
away.
He was killed or something like that.
Yeah.
Yes. Hmm. Also, second instance of Laura's theme in the show, we get the blah, blah, under all of this.
Yeah, always keeping track of the Battle of Menti hits because they kind of suggest like, oh, Twin Peaks stuff is happening, you know?
Right.
So then we get Majan's favorite scene. Do you want to take this one?
Then we get a complete palate cleanser.
Ah, beautiful.
Phew, thank goodness. Dougie's at work. You know, just grinding, just getting this bread, you know,
hustle
chasing
culture.
His paper, hustle culturing. And his coworker's in there like, hey, Dougie, why aren't you talking to me? And he just isn't looking at him or speaking to him. Mm-hmm. He's drawing on his, you know, his desk mat or whatever. And then some cops are here to talk to him about his car. And luckily, Janie E was here to pick him up. And joins just in time to talk to the cops. And his boss joins in too. And by the way, the cops are more comedian cameos, in case you didn't get enough of those yet. Just Dave Koechner's here.
Dave Koechner's here, the legend himself.
And it's like, okay, Twin Peaks Return. I don't fully get it, but I do get it.
It
is fun. And I just really enjoyed this scene where the cops are trying to grill Dougie and Janie E. I mean, come on. If you could have any woman by your side, you know what I mean? She talks these cops down. And my favorite line of hers was, they're like, was there a reason you didn't call your car in as being stolen? And she says,
reason. Yeah, I'll tell you a reason. There's more to life than cars.
Hell yeah.
Me whenever I get back into F1.
And it's just so funny to me that everybody that Janie E interacts with ends the interaction like, okay.
Oh.
All right. Like the guys who they owed money to, these cops were like, you know what? You can call us in the morning. The boss is like, I needed to talk to him, but you can go home. It's cool. It's really, really funny to me.
Can I make a confession?
Yeah, please.
I love this stuff when I first saw the show.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
I fucking hate this. I fucking hate this shit.
Uh-oh. Why do
because
you hate
if
it?
Because if I wanted to see this, I can load up fucking, you know, Karen's going crazy on TikTok and just watch this.
But I think this more reminds me.
This isn't interesting to me.
This is a more fun version than that.
I guess.
This doesn't have the vibe of, like, yes, she's, like, using her privilege and stuff, but to me, it's the meme of, excuse me, he asked for no pickles, where it's, like, Jay-Z behind Beyonce, and she, like, looks amazing, and he's all nervous, and it's, like, the mom going up being, like, he said he wanted sweet potato fries, not regular potato fries. Like, she's just, like, in control and knows, speaks her mind, and, like, I like her energy a lot here, if that makes sense. So, like, I get where both of you are coming from.
I mean, I can definitely understand why it's unpleasant to watch a white woman, like, manipulate people to, you know, be at an advantage. I think I just enjoy it because Naomi Watts is playing it in such an exaggerated way.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't fault you, Ryan, for being like, no, thank you. I just closed Twitter to watch Twin Peaks.
It is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of for comedians or whatever, the giggly cop, one in the back is like, that's not David Harbour, is it? It really looks like bargain bin David Harbour or something.
I think it was somebody else who you've probably seen. Yeah. But I don't think it was David Harbour.
No, not handsome enough. Yeah, so we got the fun cops. We have Janie here doing all the talking for Cooper. Yeah.
And so then, you know, we get out of there. Things are totally fine. The palate has been cleansed. We've done all the unpleasant stuff of the episode. We're just going to go home. It's Ike the Spike.
Ike the Spike. He can't use a spike because it's broken. So he has a gun and he tries to shoot
Cooper. The best continuity. If he had the spike, he would have succeeded. Cooper couldn't have like twisted the spike. He would have won. Yeah.
He also wasn't Cooper propelled by the old school hip hop.
Yeah.
He needed a soundtrack.
And then, of course, Cooper jumps into action and grabs the gun. And then the fucking arm pops out of the ground and goes...
Please, his hand off! Please, his hand off!
I lost my fucking mind.
So good.
Because I remember this scene. I didn't remember that the arm shows off, and I lost my mind again.
It was awesome. It was really awesome.
Fucking wild. Bananas. So good.
It's okay, so a lot of things are going on here. Let's zoom in on this. I also remembered that Ike the Spike tries to run up to Cooper in the front of the office, and then Cooper goes like full cop mode, Terminator mode. It's like amazing, right? He goes so fast and efficiently, like he activated something in his brain.
It's like Jason Bourne type stuff.
So there you go. There's the touch point. And then, yeah, they're on the ground, and he's saying, squeeze his hand off, which is like, get his hand off the gun, or like, take his hand off. It's like a weird line, but I think it's more like the Lodge is trying to keep Cooper, Dougie Cooper alive. They're like, you got this. We're going to help you out here and give you a little bit of boost. This is so brief, but the sheer comedy of the news interviews that come after this that are so awkward so and weird. Bad. They're like filmed like shit. They look like they were filmed on like local news. They successfully captured that feeling of like, who is this? That one of the women says, and I quote.
Another comedian cameo also. That's Stephanie Allen, who's like an improviser person.
I was trying to remember who that was. Yeah, I knew I recognized her face. It's either her or one of the other women who says, Douglas Jones, he moved like a cobra. All I saw was a blur, which is true enough. And then another woman is like, yeah, they like came right at me and it was crazy and they attacked. It's like, okay, people like habitually lie when things happen you're on the news. I get it.
I also really liked seeing... the way that Janie E was embellishing the situation where she was like, and then I said, Dougie, watch out. And he, you know, kicked him and did a flip. And then I was like, oh, yeah,
Dougie kicked
his ass or whatever.
And then meanwhile, Dougie is hyperfixated on the badges.
Badge. Yeah.
The whole construction of this scene is great to me because it just feels like Mark Frost and David Lynch trying to one-up each other. It's like, all right, I guess Spike is going to try to kill Cooper. And then what next? Oh, he grabs the gun. And then the fucking arm shows up and he says, squeeze his hand off. And then he runs off. And then what else happens? Well, there's a fucking news report and everybody's like, what the fuck? Dougie Jones.
Douglas Jones.
It's just ridiculous. It's just like a one long joke. It's great. Yeah, I love it.
And the detail, it's super weird, but Dougie got a piece of Ike's skin on the gun. So
he squeezed his hand off.
literally, what I said earlier, he's trying to tell him to take it off. He got a piece of his hand on the gun, which means that the police are going to be able to find Ike, probably.
So ridiculous. And that shot is so long.
I know.
I'm like, I don't want to watch you peel the skin off this.
It's so gross. Yeah.
Any longer.
Did you think this episode was going to let up? Because it's not going to. We go back to Twin Peaks next. We're at the Great Northern Hotel. Everything's chill. Ben and Beverly are chatting in his office, and they've received the key that Jade put in the mail. And he's like, huh, that's weird. This is, I'm pretty sure this was Agent Cooper's. And she goes, who's Agent Cooper? And I felt disrespected. I was like, no, no, what do you mean? He said he's our boy.
And then Ben says, oh, he came to investigate the murder of Laura Palmer. She says, who's Laura Palmer? And this happens.
Who's Laura Palmer?
Oh, that, my dear, is a long story.
And then Ben Horn looked into camera, gave us a big wink, and the screen fades. Like, come on, what are you doing? That was pretty funny to me.
That kind of felt silly to me. I like it. I definitely like it. But
that's why I clipped it, is because it's right. Silly
like,
as hell.
That's a story for another time. It's like, dog, that's like the most traumatic thing that's happened in this town, like, ever.
Yeah, right.
Also, you slept with her.
Right. Also, yeah, don't forget. Exactly. You're complicit in that whole situation. Yeah. And as you can hear in that clip, the other quirk of this scene, again, sound check alert, they are listening for a humming that seems to be maybe coming out of a lamp, but it also is probably coming from the walls of the hotel.
What if it's coming out of a drawer pull?
A drawer pull. So the underlying moment of the scene is that there is a hot, like, again, this episode's full of things like that are happening on the top and then things that are happening beneath. And beneath the scene is a humming sound that they're investigating. They don't know where it's coming from. They walk across the room, and really this scene works with headphones because the sound gets louder every time they move, and then it gets quieter when they stop moving. And it's like, what? They can't find it. It's not in any corner. It's just in the air, basically. Mm-hmm. It's super weird. I like it a lot. I don't adore the sexual tension between the two of them, but I appreciate that Ben resists here, even though it's clear that Beverly wants to do something with Ben. I don't know. Right. I think it's all a little bit odd. I don't particularly care about Ben Horn's like romantic life at this point in my life in like Twin Peaks The Return, but mm-hmm. I think Ashley Judd's a very charismatic actress, and she like brings good vibes to the scene. But they don't end up doing anything together, and they're like, we'll investigate that later. And then you think we're going to pan over it and keep with Ben, but the story is like, no, let's take a moment to hang out with Beverly. And she goes home. And a older woman tells her, you know, he's not feeling well, you should go talk to him. And we meet Beverly's husband, Tom, who is very sick and, from some sort of disease, which makes it so he can't go to work. And so Beverly is working to support the family. And he's very suspicious of how late she is. He seems to think that she was up to something. I think the stress of the scene is the fact that she wasn't up to something necessarily. I mean, she was like being with Ben Horn and maybe wanted to do something, but, you know, they didn't consummate it. It's very strange that, again, like Twin Peaks The Return bringing back people who are sick and old and dying mm-hmm. triggers a lot of my like death and sickness anxiety, which is something that's been coming up in my life again recently. And so seeing the scene, I was like, I didn't need to see this, but I'm glad they included it, so to speak, because it gives Beverly an arc, sort of. I don't think it amounts to anything if we're really talking about the like overall story of Twin Peaks The Return, but...
No, but I mean, you get this picture of this marriage that's kind of falling apart because of this, and also like you get the sense that he knows that there's something up with her and Ben Horn.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of tragic in a way that like people's lives are tragic, but in a boring way, you know?
Right.
Definitely. This is not the first time they've had this kind of conversation. Like, she gets frustrated so quickly because she's probably done this 1,000 times. And it's like, ugh, come on, really? You still, like, I'm not doing anything. Why are you so stressed about this? I thought the scene was fascinating. But we pan away. We're still in Twin Peaks. And we go to the Roadhouse for another one of the season's most infamous scenes.
Dave Lynch was like, there's too much going on in this episode.
Literally, if you wanted this to slow down, they said, okay, here's another Renault who runs the Roadhouse now. We hear on the phone.
I love, so we spend so long watching somebody sweep the floor, and he's all the way in the background.
Yes.
And so,
wait, Alan,
yeah,
did
Alan,
you timed
this scene, right?
You timed it.
It's 2 minutes on the dot. 2 full minutes.
Oh, incredible. Okay. So you spend 2 whole minutes, and this guy's in the background, and you're like, is that Jacques Renault? What?
Wait.
What?
He's alive? Dead.
Yeah. And then the phone rings, and you he's like, hey, it's Jean-Michel. Uh-oh. So it's just another Renault. This place has been run by the Renault family forever. He's talking in just that classic Renault way about how I don't even want to say the words he said because some of them are so repugnant.
This is like an anti-cameo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like they wanted to bring this guy back, but I didn't want them to bring this guy back.
Right. Yeah. I'm not having fun with this.
It's literally Walter Olkovich. It's the guy who plays Jacques Renault.
Who plays Jacques Renault, yeah. And it's just like his cousin or something.
And it's the same shit he's been saying, but worse. And it's like, okay, I don't want to see this. But I'm glad you got a paycheck at least.
Yeah. There are underage sex workers that they're asking for a discount because they're 15, and it's like, oh god. Right.
And he's like, he owes me for. Wow, I did the David Lynch nod.
Twist that knob a little bit.
He owes me for 2.
Yeah. Yep. And we need to emphasize, it's before we even hear from Jean-Michel, it's 2 minutes of Booker T and the MG's Green Onions. You know, the boom, 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 boom. But while this guy methodically and perfectly sweeps a floor, it's so satisfying, actually, because he sweeps it really well. Like, you just get to watch all the dust move. And you're like, when's the scene going to move forward? It doesn't. And then 2 whole minutes later, you're like, where am I? What's going on? Jean-Michel? Okay. All right. That's great. Mm-hmm. Green Onions is just one of those songs. It's the most classic, like, wait, that's that one song. What's it called again?
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that I always go, like, if I don't know what the song is, it's probably Green Onion. So at this point, the doppelganger Cooper makes his exit from the prison with Ray. And then our final scene of the episode, one of the strangest, but also the most, like, normal at the same time. The Double R Diner is packed one evening. Would love to be at a packed diner one night. Imagine how nice this must be. Mm-hmm. And Shelly and Norma are doing their stuff. Heidi's here. We're having a great time. Everybody's eating. There's a ton of extras. A man runs by the store and goes inside and says, has anybody seen Billy? And just so realistically, everyone's like, huh? No. What? No, didn't see him. He goes, okay.
Shelly just shrugs.
Yeah, Shelly's just, huh? I don't know. And then he leaves. And then we go to credits over people just eating food in the Double R. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. This episode does a great job, I think, playing with your expectations of, like, what's going to happen next and your suspense and, like, knowing when to reveal
Hold
things.
Hold up. The guy who plays the dude who asks for Billy.
Yeah.
He's played by Riley Lynch, one of David Lynch's sons.
Oh, cool.
And he's credited as Bing.
Bing!
Bing.
Holy shit, that's awesome.
Anyway, that's Bing.
Thank you, Bing.
Thank you, Bing. Bing.
Oh, he also, here's something fun, is in part 5 in the band Trouble.
Oh, he's in the band. Okay,
yeah,
great.
This is the same guy. Wow. So he's been in the show before. Huh.
Right.
Is Bing another Microsoft product placement after them talking about Skype?
Fuck. Yes. To answer your question, yes, definitely. So that's part 7. If you thought, like, okay, that was weird, I guess we're done being weird for now, you're wrong. It's fiction. Okay, so we did it, folks. Did you guys have any stray notes about this episode besides it was really weird and really good?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I like the scene where Diane embraces Gordon because Gordon is so taken aback that she seeks comfort in him.
Mm-hmm.
I like that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's still a tenderness between them, or like in
the finally a scene where they don't treat a woman weird,
right?
Woman weird, rather.
Yeah, in the same episode where he's like, "Champ Tammy, let me touch your hands," and you're like,
"Right."
I'm gonna show about the spiritual finger.
Yeah.
Something that I wanted to say about the Diane stuff and like the conversation she has with Cooper, bad Cooper, is. It really emphasizes that, like, part of what's so creepy about Doppel Cooper is not what he's capable of doing in the future, but also the like learning of the things that he has done in the 25 years that we haven't seen him doing stuff.
Yeah.
And that's something that was like disturbing me during that conversation.
Yeah. And I mean, they, you know, Lynch, Gordon Cole asked Diane about, you know, what happened that night. And Diane says they'll have a talk somewhere in the future and they don't really press on it more than that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're basically all but saying that Cooper sexually assaulted Diane.
Right. Right.
At some point.
Yeah.
And I like that they don't press Diane on it. And like that whole scene, like assuring Diane that she's going to have full control of the interview and stuff like that. Thought that was a really good touch in terms of the framing of somebody who went through a trauma and assuring that sort of control and comfort in respecting, you know, whatever trauma is going on there.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, you're mentioning that it's in her house and mentioning the way that she feels uncomfortable. It starts to be very clear if you know the signs of something like that. And we already know that Doppel Cooper that's not in any way below him. So it tracks definitely.
Can I make a stupid joke about the Ike the Spike part?
You're allowed. That's valid.
I think something else that Cooper could have done to get the gun out of his hand is he could have said, "Put it down" in a really loud voice. Ryan Tiger with the drawer pull made me think of that.
Put it down!
Shit.
That's the spirit of Harry passing through Cooper to make him into a super cop.
Harry, beat this thing.
Harry, yeah, and he's talking about the gun.
Yeah, you see Frank Human on the phone and just hears, "Put it down!
Put the phone down!"
Yeah.
I want to see more Weird Jerry. I obviously want to see more Diane. I love Diane as a character. And I hope we're not done with Ike the Spike.
It was so hard for me to recognize Doc Hayward.
Yeah.
Like I had to squint because obviously he has facial hair. He's much older. Mm-hmm. I had to like squint to see the resemblance because, you know, very small Skype cam, but I mean, it's him.
Yeah.
That's straight up Doc Hayward. Yeah. It's weird. Like you don't.
The fact that so many people passed away after the show or, you know, during the show's production is like, it's wild. Like,
yeah.
Harry Dean Stanton passed away soon after the show came out. Like
Warren Frost, February 2017. So, it was all in that little period. I thought it was interesting that because, as you said, Ryan, they like actually film this over Skype? Like nobody was in person with Warren Frost here.
Right. Well, you know, Scott and Mark were with Warren helping set up the scene, and then Lynch directed over Skype.
Yeah, but there's no camera on his side, so this is it. Your scene of Doc Hayward in the present is all over Skype, and that's it. And there's something like sad about that, right? Like, we just don't even get to, he's here, but we can't see him, or at least not in person. So, really good stuff here. But let's pivot. I want to give folks a heads up about next week. It's a big one that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about...
remember all that shit we said about, hey, it's going to be ramping up.
Yeah.
This is going to be like... Just ignore that for now.
Yeah. Part 8.
Next episode, in so many words, next episode is like the intermission of the show.
Exactly. Yes, that's a perfect... Definitely. It's the exact halfway point of the season. It is a time to think about some other things that have been bubbling for a little while to open up a lot of new questions. And it's going to be a pivot. So we're really
excited. All I'll say is shout outs to Michelle.
Yeah.
This one's for you, buddy.
Was written if you obsessed over the Secret History of Twin Peaks and made theories, then you're going to have a great time. So
Yep.
Yes, we're going to be watching that next week.
Part 8 is called Got a Light, and I would ask if
we all know
who said it, but we all know who said it.
We all know it.
And you will remember it forever.
You'll never forget that line delivery.
Yeah.
Dear God, I want to watch it as soon as we end this call. Here we go. No. let's take it to the plug zone, yeah, folks?
Yeah. Can you both just remind me next week to, on the Wikipedia page for Twin Peaks Season 3, the paragraph that says the plot of this episode makes a pivot between sentence 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 that is really funny to me. And let's read that next week.
Yeah, you need to send me that when we're done.
Yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just going to paste it into our chat right now.
Perfect, perfect. Okay, okay, great. Ryan, first of all, thank you, as always. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at BluestRose430.
Fantastic. And Magellan, can you handle the chat plug zone this week?
Sure, I sure can. This is the plug zone. Sorry, I got distracted by the thing I just pasted. part 8 is good. Anyway, if you'd like to get in touch with the show, you can do so in a couple of ways. You can email us at chatspod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/chatspod. Those are places to communicate with us if you have questions, comments, concerns, suggestions, I don't know, whatever it is that you want to say to us, say it to us in one of those places. You can also say it to us on our Discord, which is one of the benefits for being a patron on patreon.com/chatspod. Anybody $1 a month and up gets access to the Discord that never goes away. You will forever be a part of it, which is, you know, something that's fun. Mm-hmm. And also at $3 a month on the Patreon, you get access to thrice monthly bonus content. We are in December and we do some fun stuff in December. Alan and I talked about our Spotify Wrapped. We're going to pilot Star Trek Deep Space Nine this month. Oh my gosh. Merry Christmas to me.
Oh my God.
So that's going on. And then at $5 a month, you get thanked at the end of the episode. Such as people like Kat, Marcus, Nick and Pat of the Brothers at Infinite War, Fendon, Six, Stefan, Jen, my mom, and Arthur. Thank you, folks. If you'd like to join our subreddit to talk about old seasons of, I almost said Scape Chats, but we already talked about that one. Old seasons of Chats Television Podcast, that is at reddit.com/r/chatspod. And if you want to rate the show, we would really appreciate that. Wherever you rate podcasts, share it with your friends. And of course, shout outs as always to Camilla at Camillustrator for our podcast art.
Did you watch that DS9 pilot yet?
Nope.
No, not yet.
Okay. Yeah.
Why? Do you have questions, thoughts?
There was a scene I wanted to talk about. But
okay, we'll let you know. Let's talk about our chatsums, things we want to snack on between now and next time. Ryan, what's up?
What was that? What was that energy?
I don't know.
I want whatever that energy
deep
was.
Deep cut vine reference. Deep cut vines.
So, what's your chatsum, Ryan?
Fuck. Okay.
You're learning from Diane, I see. Fuck.
I don't have a lot. I mean, I haven't done a lot between the last episode and this episode. Here's my life. I go to work.
Yep.
I go to the gym.
Nice. Good for you. Congrats.
And I like veg.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And like play Halo.
I sit on my phone, eat hot chip, and lie, be bisexual, etc., etc.
I don't want to recommend any of these things. So instead, I'll just put the tail in between my legs and say, I've been reading Cujo by Stephen King.
Ooh, goodness gracious. Big dog.
And it's a really good book. Stephen King, turns out he's okay at writing sometimes.
Good job, Steve.
Do it for Steve.
Yeah, that's what we always do every week. We do it for Steve.
But yeah, Cujo, good book. I heard about it from Just King Things, which I plugged last week. I apologize for bringing another Stephen King thing here. But I'm like a little more than halfway through the book. It builds tension so well. One of those like horror stories where it establishes the character drama and you get so wrapped in it that you're like, oh yeah, this is also a horror book.
Mm.
Cool.
Mm.
So yeah, good book.
Nice.
IMO.
Alan, what about you?
I'm Alan. I'm thrilled that I haven't chat some this yet because I finally, on December 7th, 2021, finished a book I've been reading since January 23rd, 2021. Y'all ever heard of Frank Herbert's Dune or no?
So who's Dune?
Well, Dune, as the person who wrote Tusk, the Fleetwood Mac album, you see, which is an incredible album about the environment. No, it's Frank Herbert's 1960s book, Dune. I finally finished it. Folks who have been following the chats, like Discord and whatnot, in my life for a while know that I was planning to read it and talk about it before the movie came out, and then life got in the way, and it's a very long book, and I was not able to finish it. But not only did I finish it, but in the past evening or two, I've been reading the appendix. And I don't need to tell you why Dune is good. It's about environmentalism and racism, and it's very like self-aware about white savior narratives and how evil that can be, and it's critical of that kind of stuff. It's great. I love it. But it has this appendix that has all these different sections, like, oh, here's like what was going on with the religion that we didn't explicitly talk about. Because one of the things that puts people off of Dune as a sci-fi novel is that it doesn't like explain itself in the text very much. It just kind of like runs with it. But then you get to the appendix and it's like, oh, here's what was going on. Like, for example, did you know that there was a war before Dune where they fought like machines and decided that no human should ever be replaced by a machine ever again? And that's why there's no technology, like metal technology in Dune. A lot of cool stuff like that. And also like the whole plan to, you know, populate this desert planet with grass and whatnot, vegetation, has like specific data. There's like a whole section where there's an ecologist who's like, here's how you would do that, and it's like applicable to real life. It's so fascinating. Frank Herbert did his research, and it shows, especially in the appendices. And then he does the like, here's all the terms from Dune, and it's literally just like an Arabic dictionary, and it's like, dog, you can't, that's not a fake language, that's a language I know how to speak. It's great. I think people should, if you are willing to take the plunge and you want to be ready before part two comes out, you should give it a shot. It's a good book. Magellan, what do you got?
This is my second night in a row of having just a splash of 8 p.m. coffee. And it's pretty good, actually. I like it.
Do you not like just sleeping?
Huh?
Do you like sleeping or no?
Yeah. I slept fine. I slept fine last night. I still fell asleep. You don't have a big coffee. You don't have a whole coffee. You know what I mean? Just have a little splash, a little jolt of, you know, 8 p.m. Just a sip, couple sips, get you to the finish line. That's my Chatsum.
I love it. A splash of 8 p.m. coffee. It's awesome.
You know, people can also like have soda.
Yeah, or caffeine, you know? Caffeine. I do tea personally. Whatever. Pick your poison.
No. It's got to be coffee. Coffee. That's the chat, so it's coffee.
Coffee. Jones like, coffee. Coffee.
Folks, that's what we got. Ryan, thank you for being the fuck to my Diane. Magellan, thank you.
Wow.
Thank you for being the dust to my sweeping guy. And thank you, dear listener, for listening to this episode of Peaks Chats.
Damn good coffee.
Sorry, go ahead.
Squeeze his hand off. That's what I got.
Wait, say Damn Fine Podcast.
Damn Fine Podcast. Damn Fine. Damn.
You heard me.
You heard me. Damn Fine Podcast.
You heard me.